Well, hi, everyone. We're just at the top of the hour now. It's Miriam Berlin from Accepted.com. I want to welcome you all today to the Destination MBA Get Directions webinar given by Linda Abraham, where you'll learn not only how to choose the best MBA program for you, but also how to position yourself so those schools will want to accept you. Now, some of you submitted great questions and concerns when we asked you at the registration, what are your top MBA admissions concerns. We're looking forward to answering those questions during the webinar. But if you do have any more questions, we've set aside some time at the end for Q&A. So feel free to enter them in the question window, and we'll review those questions at the end of the webinar. Now, a bit about Linda. Linda is the founder and president of Accepted.com. She's advised thousands of applicants to top MBA programs, including Harvard, Wharton, Stanford, and has written and lectured extensively for admissions. She has 13 ebooks out, the best-selling MBA Admission for Smarties, which some of you already want a copy of, and she's been quoted by the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Business Week, among others. Of course, she also holds her own MBA from the UCLA Anderson School of Business. Now, don't miss out. At the end of the webinar, Linda will be presenting an offer to webinar participants, so make sure you're there. And now, introducing today's webinar, Destination MBA, Get Directions, with Linda Abraham.
Thank you very much, Miriam, and thank you all who are joining me here this morning. Before we start, I'd just like to learn a little bit about my audience. So first thing I'd like to know is just geographically, where are you located? Where are you logging in from this morning? It's morning my time. It's probably evening for some of you. Can you just share that with me in your question window? India, Wisconsin, Atlanta, Australia. My daughter-in-law is from Australia. India, New Delhi, New York, Colombia, Moscow, Pittsburgh, Dominican Republic, Vienna, Austria, London, UK. Wow, this is great. Delhi, Canada, India. That's great. Thank you so much for sharing the information. Anybody else want to add? Please go on. And the second thing I'd like to know is just where are you at in the application process? And Miriam is going to post a poll, and I'm going to ask you, where are you planning to apply? Round one this year, round two this year, round three later or later this year, next year, or if you're just unsure, you can put that also. So please just let me know where you're at. Okay, I see that most of you, certainly the plurality, the majority are planning to apply round one. That's great, and I'm really glad to have you here. And okay, I'm going to count to five, and we're going to close the poll. We'd like to get a little bit more participation. But 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Great, we're at 78% participating, and let's share the results. Okay, 52% of you are planning to apply round one this year, 21% are planning to apply round two, 3% round three or later this year, and 17% next year or later, and 7% of you are unsure. That's fine. And I'm really pleased that so many of you are planning ahead and aiming for those, also for the aiming for those round one deadlines. So either way, I'm glad to have you. Okay. While we're talking about the future, I'm going to start actually with the past in the presentation. In preparing for this webinar, I ended up thinking about how my family and I used to spend some afternoons many, many years ago, about 50 years ago, as to be specific, when I was a child. Families would go for a drive. They would all pile into the car on a Sunday afternoon, especially popular, it was cool and drizzly, and just go driving. You didn't even need a destination. Gas cost 31 cents a gallon, and today's dollars, that would translate to $1.80 a gallon, and I'm guessing that most of us would be thrilled to be paying that. Today, however, I rarely hear about families just going on a drive. Maybe time is more precious. Certainly gas is more expensive. And somehow it just doesn't seem to happen. And there are so many other things to do. Yeah, I know gas isn't quite as expensive as it's shown on the screen, but that really was what it cost a few months ago. There's so many other things to do. There's the internet, there's media, there's smartphones. The lazy Sunday afternoon aimless drive has gone the way of the horse and buggy. Today, we usually have a destination before we get in the car or take a journey. And given the cost of gas, the value of our time, and the many demands on our time, we We wouldn't think of just driving for the sake of driving. And of course, traffic is much, much worse. Or would we? Would we? It's true in most endeavors, we definitely have a destination, but it seems like MBA admissions is an exception to this rule. Applicants frequently say that they don't have a reason for pursuing a graduate education, or they will have only a very vague general reason, like, I want to get a good job, or more education is always better, or something really, really vague like that. I want to get a good job. Well, any number of activities or study forms of study could prepare them for that. Another common answer is, I want to study marketing or finance or operations, or I want to go into finance, marketing, or consulting. And either of those two answers means they still really don't have a clue why they want to go for an MBA or what they want to do after it. Essentially, they're doing what I did as a child, my family and I did as a child, when we just went for that lazy afternoon drive. They have no direction. They're aimless. And an MBA education is way too expensive to take that approach. So the recruiting for internships starts way too early. To arrive on campus with no idea, only the vaguest of notions of what you're trying to accomplish. Furthermore, many programs want to admit applicants who have direction and know exactly why they are going to that program, and how that program is going to help them. The Sunday drive approach hurts your chances of acceptance and also reduces the likelihood of that great job. So let's leave the old family station wagon and the garage of memories and proceed with a practical, purposeful 21st century approach to MBA admissions. And today, that's exactly what I'm going to present, a purpose-driven approach to MBA applications that not only will maximize your chance of acceptance, but also maximize your chances of getting a great job when you're done with your MBA. That's what I like to call the accepted positioning system. Now, it's a four-point system, and we're going to go through all four steps in the process. Now, let's go back to my trip analogy for a moment. When you plan a trip, what is the first item of information you need to know? And can you put your answer in the question window on your dashboard? I'm going to try and make this an interactive webinar. Destination. Vaibhav, you got it. I apologize if I mispronounce anybody's name. Nikki, Vaibhav, Himanshu, you have it. What is the first thing you need to know when you plan a trip? You need to know where you're going. The same is true with MBA admissions. Your starting place for your entire application is your post-MBA goal. I want to emphasize that it isn't solely your past experience, it isn't solely your ethnic background, it isn't even your academic stats. Those are not the starting place for your MBA planning. The starting place for your MBA planning is your post-MBA goal. So the first thing you have to do is to determine that goal. You need to begin with the end in mind. And the question becomes, what do you want to do that you can't do now without an MBA? And that is usually defined in terms of function. What do you want to do and the industry you want to do it? Your post-MBA goal has two required elements. What do you want to do? Not study, but what do you want to do when you earn your MBA, and in what industry do you want to do it? So let's give some examples of function. I'll give them. An investment banker, that's something you want to do investment banking, you want to do technology consulting, you want to do brand management. And again, these are not necessarily topics of study in an MBA program. Yes, you can study brand management, but you're not going to study investment banking as a topic, as a class. You'll study elements of it to prepare you for that field. And then the question becomes, okay, in which industry do you want to do it? Do you want to work in software, financial services, manufacturing, consumer packaged goods, telecom? Those are the required elements of your post-MBA goal. That is how you define your post-MBA goal. They are essential to that definition. And if you have those two elements, you can show the school that you have direction. Now, many of you will be career changers attempting to change functions. It is very hard, you should know that right off the bat, it is very hard to change both function and industry. If you attempt to change function, you may want to stay in the industry so that your familiarity with your industry makes your past experience more relevant to a future employer, and simply facilitates a transition. For some of you, location might be an important part of your goal. Some of you may want to work in emerging markets. Some of you may want to work in a particular country, the country you grew up in, or the city where your family lives, a location where your significant other has a job or simply wants to live, some place with the weather you like. Whatever the factor is that makes location important to you, that can be also part of your post-MBA goal and part of the decision-making process and the guidance you get from the goal in terms of choosing schools and choosing where you invest your time and energy. For some of you, the world is your oyster, and location is not terribly important to you, and that's fine too. But again, that's more of an optional element to the goal. Now, I have another poll I'd like to post, and Miriam's going to put it up. I'd like to know how clear your goals are. So Miriam's going to share this poll with you. Let's just give her a second. The options will be, I have a clear goal that I can define in terms of function and industry. I have a goal that is fuzzy. And I just know I want an MBA, but I don't know what I want to do after I earn that degree. So if you could please indicate which statement you identify with most. Okay, we're getting, we're about 50% having voted. Let's get a little more. You guys are doing great. I think we have a very active audience here today. We're at 66%. Can we get a little bit more? Great. I'm going to count down from 5. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We're at 80%, and Miriam's going to close the poll and then share the results with you. 41% of you have a goal that is clear. You can define it in terms of function and industry. 44% have a goal that is fuzzy, and 50% are in the, I just want an MBA. I don't know what I want to do with it. I'm actually really pleased that 41% of you have this clear goal. That's fantastic. I actually expected a smaller number. I expected the plurality to be the fuzzy ones, the fuzzy goal. And for those of you in the 15% that, you know, you just want an MBA, well, I hope I'm going to convince you that you need to have a clear goal before the hour is up. And I hope that's one of the main things you'll take away from this, actually. So, all right, now that I know where you're at, let's go forward. What if your goal is fuzzy? Okay? Maybe you have one element of the two that I provided. Maybe it's just very general. Then I think I really recommend you research your professional options and clarify what you want to do just as you would do if you were going on vacation or a journey. It's the same idea. You don't kind of know you're going to, I don't know, New York State. You're going to go to New York City, or you're going to go to Niagara Falls in New York, which is where I just got back from, or you're going to go to, I don't know, Hyde Park, Franklin Roosevelt's home. You're going to define it a little bit more specifically if you take a journey. And the MBA is a wonderful, exciting, thrilling, enlightening journey. It's also an expensive one, and you want to make the most of it. Some of you are thinking that you want to figure out your goal when you get to business school. I think that's a terrible idea. Many top programs, and there's two main reasons for this, many top programs want to see the direction that I outlined and view it as much as a qualification for acceptance as a good GMAT score, a high GPA, or impressive career progression. Now, you can modify your plans as time goes on, but there's a big difference between being open to new opportunities and being clueless or directionless in the application process. In a recent consortium chat at Exhibit.com, Washington Olin's admissions director, Evan Buffett, has said, We want you to craft a good argument for yourself that goes something like this. Here's who I've been so far in my life professionally, and maybe even personally. This is where I want to go, and this is how the MBA is going to get me there. And I hear this again and again. But let me give you another example from Tuck, Tuck's MBA program. It is critical that you enter your MBA program with a firm idea of what you want to do upon graduation. It is critical, that's their word, not mine. Your first month, semester, year of B-School is not the time to figure it out. You should have a good idea of your strengths, weaknesses, and interests before you unpack your moving truck. Now, especially for American applicants, where the idea of finding yourself in college was very much accepted, you are not expected to know what you wanted to do when you arrived at college. This is a major difference between graduate school and undergraduate school. You are expected to know what you want to do. Now, I hear this line of thought, again and again when I speak with admissions directors. Admittedly, not all schools put quite as much emphasis as, let's say, Tuck or Olin put on the goal. But MIT for years hasn't asked about goals. Harvard didn't ask last year, and at this point has a small question about it in its application. However, I would argue, and this is the second reason that MBA goals are so critical to the process, I argue that those goals, having clearly defined goals, are important even if schools don't ask for them, even if they're not a required part of the admissions process. And I have to ask you, how can you spend $100,000, more than $100,000 out of pocket, and 2 years of your life, foregoing income for those 2 years, without a good reason for doing so, something concrete that you want to accomplish? It's mystifying to me. And I hope I've convinced you that your goals are an important factor in the application process. However, clear goals will help you when you arrive on campus too, just as Tuck said. Internships are important steps towards your first permanent position post-MBA. And this came out, it's been known for years, but a recent GMAC study, which was reported by the Wall Street Journal, and that's where I got the slide you're looking at now, and just this month. Recruiting for internships starts within weeks of your arrival on campus. You need focus and direction when you land at your dream program to hit the ground running for the internship search, because a good internship frequently leads to a good full-time job, and that's what those stats show. Right? Almost 50% of Chicago Booth students got their full-time job from their internship. Over 40% at Harvard and at Darden. Duke is about 30%. Now, those numbers just testify to the importance of that internship. And again, the internship search starts almost when you land, when you arrive. So, and furthermore, the internship to job rate rises as employers increasingly pick from summer talent, which was the title of this Wall Street Journal article, reports that 69% of summer interns who applied for full-time positions received offers, with even higher conversion rates in consulting, finance, and accounting. So consulting and financial services are, of course, the two biggest employers of MBA graduates. And if you want to go in that direction, it is absolutely critical that you arrive on campus with directions so that you can make the most of the internship search. These goals will help you determine where to invest your time and energy in extracurricular activities, in job search, and of course, in terms of which classes to choose. This is where I want to go with your goal, your destination. It's the opposite of that good old Sunday drive. And again, I want to emphasize that what I'm presenting here is a purpose-driven approach to MBA admissions and indeed to graduate management education. So what about that 44% of you whose goals are fuzzy? Well, you need to clarify your goals. Analyze deeply what you have done and liked and what you have done and disliked. What are you good at? Don't limit yourself to work. Examine extracurricular activities and community service and just other areas of your life. Talk to mentors and people whose judgment you trust. Request informational interviews from people in positions that you believe appeal to you. Ask them what they like and dislike about their job. Ask them what is a typical day. Ask them if they have and value the MBA. Ask them for educational recommendations. What degrees do they think are good for people in their position? What schools? What classes? And the last point before we move to step two of the four-step accepted positioning system is, what about more visionary or goals or aspirations? What Tsiba.com consultant Cindy Tokumitsu likes to call goals plus. They're great, very simple. Something that you want to accomplish beyond supporting yourself or your family, or simply having a gratifying career. And if you need that kind of purpose and added meaning to your life, wonderful. You can certainly have some greater goals part of your motivation to earn an MBA, but be realistic. If you are earning far more now than you are likely to make in this dream career, your dream may not pass the realism smell test. If your dream career doesn't financially justify the cost of your education, it may not pass the realism smell test. However, if realization of this dream is something that is an outgrowth of more grounded goals, or perhaps something you can do in parallel to financial rewarding work that is realistic, you will pass that realism smell test and frankly earn the admiration of those people who read your essays and admire your goals. So step one means that you have a clear goal. Which schools will help you achieve it? That's step two of the accepted positioning system. Now, I want to ask you, again, I don't want to do all the work here. So my question to you now is, what are some of the things that you should look at in a school when you're choosing schools? Please put the answer in your question window. Class size, employers, good. Culture, fit, location, alumni network, specialization, good. Teaching style, recruitment, brand, I tend to de-emphasize brand. Environment, location, culture, networking, okay. Career services, excellent, Brian. People around you, okay. All right, let me tell you what I think you should look at, but you are all doing very well. I'm a little surprised that not one person mentioned classes, the curriculum, because that's actually what you're going for, but we'll get into that. Okay, very good. Thank you for your responses. The number one thing that I think you should look at, first of all, and many of you did hit on that, is recruiting, career management. Where do graduates get jobs? You want to check the school's employment reports, and you also want to go a little bit deeper than the employment reports typically go by looking at talking to alumni and current students. But I think that is definitely the number one thing in this purpose-driven approach that you have to look at. Number two, and this is the one item that you did not mention, I don't think any of you mentioned, was the curriculum. What are you going to study, and how does this school teach it? What classes and special programs support your goal? Are there certificates, concentrations, immersions that are relevant to you? Are there competitions that are relevant to you? Are there professors doing cutting-edge research that you are interested in and that's relevant to you and your goals? What teaching method appeals to you? Some schools use exclusively case method, though at this point the classic ones were Harvard and Dart, and they're mixing in experiential learning. Most schools use some kind of mix of case, experiential, and lecture, but they will weight it one way or the other. So for example, Ross is very much experiential, though it also does use case and lecture. And some schools are more lecture-oriented. I believe Carnegie Mellon actually has a fairly high percentage of lectures in its curriculum. Which do you prefer? Which mix do you prefer? The third thing that you should be looking at, and some of you did mention that, though not that much, is extracurricular activities. A lot of the MBA education is out of class. So are there clubs and activities related to your specific interests and goals? And actually, here is where the competitions belong, not under the previous bullet point. Conferences, active student groups. If you look at the list of clubs on campus, click through, make sure that the clubs aren't just on the list, make sure that they are actually alive and active. Are there treks? If you're going to look at a school on the East Coast but really prefer to work in Silicon Valley, are there treks? Conversely, if you're going to go to a school in California or the Midwest, but you really want to work on Wall Street, are there trips to Wall Street? Are there overseas study opportunities if you're particularly interested in global business? All those are things that you should be looking at and considering. I know I was just talking with a friend whose son is at UCLA, and I was asking her how he's enjoying it. She says he just loves it, and that he's been involved in some competitions that he was particularly excited about. And then the fourth thing that you're going to look at, and yes, this too counts, is just personal preferences. Do you want to go to a school with a large class size? And some of you mentioned that in a minute ago. What about the needs of your significant other and family? Those are all relevant. Do you want a warm climate, a cold climate? Do you want to be in an urban location or a rural or a small college town? Do you want a big class size or small class size? Be honest with yourself. How important to you is it that there be that you be with lots of people like you, however you want to define that? Or do you want to stretch more, and are you willing maybe to go outside that cliched comfort zone? Those are all important questions that go into the personal preference part of the puzzle. And those should be considered as well as recruiting, meaning career options, curriculum, what you're going to study, and extracurricular activities, the outside class part of learning. Now, how do you research schools? I would suggest that you start with the easy steps first. While I'm not a big fan of rankings, I think the specialty rankings can be a good place to start your research. Explore, I wouldn't take them without a large grain of salt, but they are a good place to start. So check the specialty rankings for the fields that you are most interested in, that you plan to go into. Perhaps if you can, talk to people, some of your informational interviews, and again, ask them which schools do they recommend. Explore thoroughly the websites of the schools that support your goals, keeping in mind your qualifications, which we'll get to more. I don't want you to spend tons of time pursuing schools that you really don't have a chance of getting into. So we're going to explore the qualifications part of this puzzle in a minute, but you can dream a little bit, but don't waste too much time on it. Talk to current students and alumni, attend MBA fairs and events, read student blogs. All these are ways for you to learn about the schools. But the Cadillac way to learn about the school is to visit. The best time to visit a campus is when class is in session, so you can sit in on class. If that's not possible, if you're just too far away, make sure you go when there's an information session close to you so that you can ask questions and get information. If students are around, either at the information session, which is increasingly common, or on campus when you visit, then by all means, talk to them. Get some candid, off the record, off the script insight into the program. Ask them what they like, what they dislike. Go to the cafeteria, go to the student lounge, the Winter Gardens, if you're at Chicago Booth or Cornell. Wherever you see students, take the advantage of the opportunity to talk to them. Sometimes applicants ask if they should visit before they apply or only when invited to interview. Visiting before you apply will give you insight and perspective that will help you decide whether to apply and how to answer any why this school questions. But obviously there's an expense in visiting. There might be time off work. There might be travel involved, and that's an individual kind of calculation. It may not be practical or economically feasible for you to visit all your target programs before you apply, and that's okay. Then go only when you're invited to interview or when accepted. But do take advantage at that point of any visits from the school to your geographic location. And I realize you have to be practical, and the answer to when you should visit will vary depending upon distance and budget. But I do want to remind you that I can't imagine any of you buying a condo for a couple hundred thousand or a house without seeing it. I also can't imagine you buying a car for much less money without giving it a test drive or seeing it. And I think that the MBA investment in education also requires some in-person analysis. Now I mentioned that we're going to move towards the qualifications part of this, which is, I think, the part that you folks had the most concern about, certainly in your responses to our question when you registered. You are seeking a program that supports your goals. We've been really talking about your future, what you want post-MBA, what you want from a school. And again, I firmly believe that your MBA planning should begin with the end in mind. Achieving that professional end is the reason for this whole exercise and for going for the MBA. Now, if you've done step one and two, you probably have a real good idea of the schools you would like to attend. But of course, this process just isn't about what you want. It's not that simple. The question then becomes, where are you competitive? So for step three of the accepted positioning system, we're going to switch gears. The first two steps have focused on, as I said, what you want, very much a future focus. Now, you need to consider what the schools want in applicants. And to be an effective applicant, you want to apply to schools that support your goals and are likely to accept you. So the focus is going to switch in this webinar at this point, and it's going to go to the past, what you've done to date, as the school will evaluate your qualifications. If you apply exclusively to schools where you are not competitive, you are probably wasting your time and money. So you have to consider both what you want and what the schools are likely to want. And if there's a mismatch between what you want and in terms of the school and whether you're likely to get accepted, then you need to either improve your qualifications or change schools. Now, what are some of the things the schools are going to look at? Please post that in your question window. What are some of the qualifications? Leadership, excellent. Experience, GPA, GMAT, very good. GMAT score, GPA, work experience, achievements. Personal qualities, very good, Anna. International experience, exposure, very good. Extracurriculars, leadership potential. Come on, good. Extracurriculars, Amian. Work experience, communication skills, management skills, very good, Ganapathy. Excellent. Okay, wonderful. I'm going to go and give you kind of what I see as the four pillars of a successful application. You have most of them. Sometimes in a little bit, in some cases a little bit more detail than I'm going to give. But let's go through it, okay? The first element in your qualifications is academic competitiveness, showing that you can simply do the work and excel at whatever school you apply to. And academic competitiveness is not exclusively your test score and undergraduate GPA, but those are definitely real important components in academic competitiveness. So, for the GMAT, I'm not going to go a lot into the GMAT right now. I actually did a webinar about a month ago on whether you should retake the GMAT and the implications of the GMAT score. So obviously I could go into a lot more detail than I have time for here. But the question is going to come up for the top 10 programs, top programs you really want to be at 80th percentile, ideally, on each on the quant and the verbal. If you're a little bit below, it's not the end of the world. That's a guideline. It's not a hard and fast rule. But some of you may be wondering if you should retake the GMAT. We do have a blog post that outlines specifically whether you should retake the GMAT, who should, who shouldn't. And I'm wondering, Miriam, could you possibly post that? I don't have it on the slide. I meant to maybe, thank you very much. Miriam posted it. After the webinar is over, you can open it now, but go read it later if you're concerned about your GMAT score. The other element, as I'm sure you realize, in academic competitiveness is your undergraduate grades. Now, the truth is that if your GMAT is below where you want it to be, there's the best way to handle it is simply to retake and raise it. There's very little explanation or other ways around it. If your grades were low, then there's a few things you can do. One, you can provide context for the low grades, and we're going to get to that in a minute. Or the best way to deal with it is to show that you can perform today. You can point to then extras like post-college courses, graded courses where you earned A's, additional degrees, certifications, anything like that, the CFA, for example, if you're in financial services. Any of those things would help to mitigate low grades. Now, in terms of mitigating circumstances, which is also known as context, what you want to do, first of all, realize that context is absolutely critical in interpreting, especially if you went through a hard time. The hard time is the context surrounding your grades. Context is king in terms of mitigating grades. If you can show that circumstances have changed and no longer influence your performance, and you can also show recent performance that is at a level the schools want, then you've gone a long way towards mitigating the impact of low grades, depending also, of course, on how low they were and where you're applying. So hopefully you have good grades and a good GMAT score, If you don't, I hope that some of these suggestions will help you. If not, again, we have resources on the site. If you go to tsip.com and you were to Google overcoming weaknesses, not Google, we have a search box there. Just plug in overcoming weaknesses. You'd see a lot of resources on overcoming low test scores or low GPA. Many of you mentioned work experience as another element in qualifications, and you're 100% right. For most, the work experience as a qualification consists of two aspects, quantity and quality. And let me ask you with a show of hands. You don't have to put it in the question window, just a show of hands. How many of you, and by hands, there's a hand icon on your dashboard, so just click on it if you agree with this statement. How many of you think that quantity of work experience is more important in the admissions process than quality? Anybody got to click on that hand? Okay, we have 5%. I don't know if that means that you disagree with the statement or if it means that you're all asleep. How many of you feel that quality of work experience, wait a second here, quality of work experience is more important than quantity? All right, that will get some action. All right. 51%. Whoa, 51% versus 5. You people are all very quality oriented. That's great. All right, well, it was a trick question. The truth is they're both important. In my opinion, at least, they're both important, and you need to have both. I'm probably inclined to agree with you that quality is slightly more important, but you really need to have both. For most full-time programs, the sweet spot in terms of quantity is 3 to 6 years, with more flexibility on the upper end. It's getting increasingly difficult at full-time MBA programs to get accepted, certainly with less than 2 years of full-time experience. A little fuzziness between 2 and 3. 3 to 6, like I said, is the sweet spot. I think there's a little more flexibility, 7, 8 years of full-time experience. And quantity tends to get more attention than quality because it's much more concrete. It's easier to do, to put your finger on. But quality is, as you noticed, as you all noted, really, really important. And I think once you have the quantity, then the quality actually is far more important. If you're in that sweet spot, quality is going to determine whether you're accepted or rejected. So what makes for quality work experience? And some of you did mention it when I asked my last question, and that would be above average growth and progression on the job, leadership, assumption of responsibility, impact and contribution. How and impact means you've made a difference. How have you made a difference? Think of Jimmy Stewart in It's a Wonderful Life, that old movie from the 1930s. That's the kind of impact and contribution that you want to be able to show. Now, we've already mentioned in terms of pillars of your application, somebody mentioned a minute ago international exposure. That is also a part of work experience that's very much valued, though it can also be part of your personal background. Okay, the third element, the third pillar of a successful application of your qualifications is extracurricular activities, community service. And I want to ask you, why do you think it's important? And again, please post in the question window. Why do you think it's important? Why do schools value it? Why does it matter? Let's, again. Rebecca, good. So you can contribute back to the school down the line. Express your personality. Wonderful. Well-rounded, balanced individual. Good. Shows integrity, possibly. Extracurricular. Good. Responsibility. Shows passion. Sheikh, good. To demonstrate leadership qualities that sometimes you are not able to have in shorter work periods. Howard, excellent. Very, very good. Life outside work, shows initiative and passion. Good, you're all right. Those are all the reasons that extracurricular activities and community service are important. You're right. Okay. And the biggest reason is, as you said, it allows you to show desirable personal qualities, specifically leadership, responsibility, initiative, teamwork, an I care attitude. But I think the biggest reason that it's important is that a lot of time, most of you are still fairly junior in your careers, and it can be hard to show a major impact on the job when you are a low man on the totem pole. It's just that simple. It can be hard to show initiative if you're in a very highly structured career path. And it can be hard to assume responsibility in a hierarchical organization. Community service, extracurricular activities, those non-professional areas of your life can be much easier to show these qualities in. And then the fourth pillar of a successful application, of a competitive application, is why admit you? What will you add to the class? Are you going to add something distinctive, or are you just going to blend in? Now, if you're applying to the elite programs, the programs where the acceptance rate is under 20%, and in some cases under 10%, this becomes an increasingly important element of the process. What will you add to the class? It's hard to address since you don't know your competition, and certainly you don't know them individually. It's easier if you come from a non-traditional background or underrepresented group. But whatever group you identify with, you shouldn't be cocky if it's underrepresentative and non-traditional, and you shouldn't be despondent if it's overrepresented, because you still want to present yourself as a distinctive, if not unique, individual in the applicant pool. The challenge is the same. Now, I'd like to, how do you do that? Well, you talk in terms of specifics. They are just key. So for example, are you a consultant? Are you an environmental consultant, or perhaps a transportation consultant, or a consultant specializing in healthcare? What are your non-professional interests? A lot of times, that's going to be a way in which you distinguish yourself. Are you a race car driver? And I want to say, though, that you don't have to do something like race car driving or climbing Mount Everest or swimming the English Channel or bungee jumping or something crazy to distinguish yourself. You just have to present what you do in a distinctive way with enough specifics to be distinctive and also with your own unique perspective on those events. So I'd like to do a little thought experiment with you now. And again, I'm going to ask for shows of hands, okay? So how many of you have volunteered either in college or since? Please give me a show of hands. How many of you volunteered? Okay. Wait another few seconds. Anybody else has volunteered either in or since college? Any form of volunteering? Okay. Next question. How many of you have led a group, team, or organization in college or since college? Any kind of leadership role in or since college? Team, department, organization, anything? Anybody else want to participate? Raise your hand if you've led anything. Okay. And then the last of this set of questions is... Hold on a second. How many of you ran a half marathon? How many of you exercise regularly? Do some kind of physical fitness, exercise? Anybody? Anybody else want to keep fit? Make an effort to keep fit? Okay. All right. That's one set of questions. Next set of questions. How many of you, either now or in the past, have taught for junior achievement? Okay. Oh, a lot of you have. Actually, I'm surprised. Okay. How many of you led a get-out-the-vote effort for either President Obama or Mitt Romney? Okay. And last question. Wait a second, I'm having trouble with my mouse again. How many of you ran a half or full marathon on behalf of your favorite charity and raised at least $5,000 for it? Okay. Okay, great. Now, on the in terms of the volunteering, just to give you the numbers here, how many of you have volunteered? 54%. How many of you led a group, team, or organization? 50%. How many of you exercise regularly? 51%. How many of you teach for junior achievement? I think the top number was 19%. How many of you led a get-out-the-vote effort for either President Obama or Mitt Romney? One person, 1%. And how many of you ran a half marathon on behalf of your favorite charity and raised $5,000 for it? 12%. What is the difference in the question window, please, between the two sets of questions? Scale, kind of. Okay, anybody else want to take a pick? One is more, set is more specific, one is generalized. Exactly right. Brian and Varun, Himanshu, second set is specific. Rebecca, you're right. Specifics, Abhishek, yes, you have it. The first is simple. It's not so much a matter of simplicity or not simple. I mean, it can be depending upon what you're exercising, personal versus generic. Matt, you got it. Exactly. Do you see how specifics help to differentiate you? If you talk in general terms about volunteering, about leadership, about exercise, then you blend in with everybody else who's superficially just like you. But if you talk in terms of specifics, you are automatically distinguishing yourself. I know you don't. That means you don't have to climb Mount Everest or swim the English Channel to be distinguished. You just have to tell your story in a specific way. And that will help to differentiate you, help to show that you have a unique experience to contribute to your class. All right, so step one of the accepted positioning system was, let's just get through these slides here. Step one of the positioning system is have a goal that will guide you. Step two is research the schools and know which schools support your goals. Step three is evaluate your competitiveness so you know where you have a chance of getting in. Step four, it all comes together here. And it becomes almost obvious which schools you should apply to. You want to apply to those schools that are likely to accept you and the schools you want to attend. The schools you want to attend are those that support your goals and teach, provide a graduate management education in the way you want it provided. So, on the schools that support your goals, where are you competitive? You want to end up with a list of 4 to 8 schools that you're going to apply to. If you apply to fewer schools, apply more conservatively. And let's go back up to that guide and I'll show you what I mean. If you apply to fewer schools, then maybe apply more over in this range. If you want to be a little riskier and, let's say, apply over here, then apply to a few more schools. Be realistic. You don't, you know, unless, and the other option is if you want to, let's say, another approach is to apply round one to schools where your chances aren't that great. You still have a chance, but maybe they're what I would call stretch schools. And then apply round two, if you're not accepted, a little bit more conservatively. Or this year more aggressively and next year more conservatively. If you want to apply it, you may want to, whatever strategy you approach you would take, assess what's important to you, and then be realistic. If you are prepared to deal with rejection and you want to apply a little bit more aggressively this year or the first round, that's fine. If you really, really don't want to deal with rejection or the possibility of reapplication, then apply a little bit more conservatively. Now, applying to appropriate programs is the route to acceptance, guided by self-knowledge, school research, and a clear understanding of your professional and educational goals. Choosing the right schools is the foundation not only of a successful MBA application, but a successful MBA experience. The application journey, however, just to focus on the application for a moment, continues after you arrive at your perfect MBA choices through essay land, through essay recommendation and interview land. If you have followed these steps and also done a great job of representing your qualifications, you could even visit the Kingdom of Multiple Acceptances or the Land of Scholarships. Now, to help you arrive at these wonderful places, I have four special resources for you. The first one is simply to invite you to take advantage of our Early Bird Special. You can save 10% on all non-rush MBA admission services anytime between today and July 15th. Just enter Early Bird EB10 at checkout and you'll get the 10% off. You can learn about our staff. We have a highly experienced staff of consultants and editors at exhibit.com/aboutus. You can explore our services at exhibit.com/services. And obviously you can contact us in any number of ways. There are various forms linked to from the services section. And there's also our contact us page. You can call, chat, whatever is your preference. And we also have some free resources for you if you're not yet ready to engage with a consultant. First off, you can test your MBA smarts and win. The first five people to get 100% on the quiz at this page will get a copy of MBA Admission for Smarties. It's a short quiz. It's not a hard quiz. The material should be very familiar to you if you've listened to the webinar. And this is available in either paperback or Kindle version if you choose to purchase it, which would be very much appreciated. You can do so either at the URL on the screen or on Amazon. It's probably the best places to find it. And everyone who just visits this page, the quiz page, can download MBA Admissions A to Z, which is 26 terrific tips for MBA admissions. MBA Admission for Smarties is a real comprehensive approach with a lot of, you know, strategy and then tactics. How to write the essays, where to go for letters of recommendation, how to deal with interviews, etc. So it's a little bit more comprehensive. It's a lot more comprehensive than MBA Admissions A to Z. Finally, I know I've presented a lot here, and we prepared an infographic that summarizes and maps out the whole process. That URL is now on the screen. And based on your concerns, we also, I want to direct you to a few other resources at accepted.com where you can get information that will help to address your concerns. And I think we're going to be sending you out an email that provides even more resources that address the concerns you raised in the question that you responded to when you registered. So MBA Admissions for Smarties, I already mentioned that. More on evaluating your GBAT and whether you should retake or not retake, that's here, and though the URL that Miriam gave you before specifically addresses that question, we have other articles at the gmat.aspx location that you might be interested in. And then mba/application.aspx provides you with just a lot of resources. You can see it on your screen on planning your application. And there are other pages at accepted.com that deal with overcoming weaknesses, writing the goals essay, what about MBA admissions for career changers, and that. Now, I'm going to start taking your questions. I know Miriam has marked some of them for me. I'm going to look for them right now. And then I also want to mention that if we don't get to all the questions today, you can post any questions that you have that we don't get to either on accepted.com's Facebook page, facebook.com/accepted, or on our LinkedIn group. So whatever you prefer. Now, okay, Matt has asked, how would I know if I have low grades? My undergrad scores, grad scores are graded in percentage basis and not GPA. That's a very good question. It also depends on which school you're applying to, okay? So the first thing I would say is if you were a good student, an above average student in your college, in your university, then you can assume that your percentage is above average in applying. There's nothing you know, if you were in the top 20%, then that percentage would be understood and translate into top 20%, you know, let's say 3.5 or above in the 4-point GPA. If your percentage was considered low at your college, it probably would be considered low here. I can't give a translation because grading scales vary by country and school, and so I don't think it would be terribly effective for me to just give, you know, above 80% is fantastic, equivalent to a 3.8 or above, and you know, I don't think that would be terribly effective. But I think it's a very good question, and I would just rely on your own knowledge, objective knowledge of how you did in college, to assume that percentage is going to translate. Now, another very common question is, should you translate your grade point percentage, or your honors degree if you're from the UK, when applying to U.S. business schools? If the school asks you to do so, then yes, you should do so. And if it doesn't ask you to do so, then really rely on the school to be able to interpret your transcript. I've so many times seen that applicants go to the transcript interpretation services, and somehow they interpret it in a way where their performance is not as good as it really was. So if you don't have to translate your transcript, you don't have to provide an interpretation for your transcript, then don't do it. Just rely on the school to interpret it. Okay, let's see what else you have here. I see lots and lots of questions. Okay. Avishek, okay, you also have a very interesting question, Avishek. Thank you very much. You say, I'm having difficulty identifying post-MBA goals. I'm interested in finance. However, my experience is in IT, and I'm skeptical regarding my chances given the current financial crisis. I believe I have greater chances in consulting, tech, hence the confusion. Okay, well, that is a very good question. I think some of that is going to depend on the school that you're going to. You are, of course, correct that there has been enormous contraction in financial services. So if you are accepted, I think, at one of the elite schools in financial services, Wharton, Columbia, Chicago, London Business School, it probably can facilitate your transition to financial services. If you are accepted at a school that's not particularly well known for placements in finance, it might be harder for it to facilitate your transition to investment banking, which is what I'm assuming you're interested in. The other possibility is if you're talking finance but not specifically investment banking, which has been really hit, maybe you're talking about finance and, you know, corporate finance, working in finance, then you know you have some flexibility in that sense. Then you could probably make this transition and state that as your goal. And then you have to, I mean, the other part of the question is, if you only want to do finance and you can't get into a school that will ease your transition, do you want to get the MBA? Would you be happy going into consulting, given that your background is in IT? Is that a good second? Would it be worth it to you to get the MBA if you could only do consulting? So you can also apply and say, let's say I want to do finance and focus on the IT industry, you know, specifically the part of the industry that you're most familiar with. That would help ease your transition. So it's somewhat of a complex question to address in this forum, but I hope that I've given you some good insight. Okay. Archit asks, how much weight is assigned to academic competitiveness as compared to other elements of the application? It's also a good question. Thanks. It's very hard to quantify. I believe that your job through the application, again, your fundamental job, the reason I started with academics, is to show that you can do the work. Now, once you show you can do the work, I don't think the academics are going to play much of a role. But if the schools doubt that you can do the work, they don't want people dropping out or flunking out, and they don't want people struggling there. So it's one of these things where it's like, once you do that, I don't think they play a role much at all, unless you have a really super high GMAT and you're applying to schools that are trying to move up in the rankings, and they kind of value you almost for your GMAT because it makes them look good. I think that other elements of the application, specifically your work experience, your personal qualities, fit, etc., become much more important once you show that you can do the work. Okay. Let's see what other questions I have. Maybe I'll take one or two more. Ulysses asks, would number three, knowing your qualifications, be some sort of SWOT analysis? Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. I never thought of it like that. You could try that approach. I don't have a particularly strong opinion on that. I know what a SWOT analysis is. I don't really see it as that much because I don't see the opportunity and threat part of it there. I certainly see the strengths and weaknesses. But thank you for the question. Let's see what else. Ganapathy asks, will schools give importance to my extracurriculars such as involvement in Toastmasters, National Entrepreneurship Network, and CSR, even though I have some 3 years of work experience and only a 2.7 to 3 GPA? Schools will definitely consider it, but that doesn't mean they won't consider that you only have 3 years of work experience and, depending upon the school, what most would consider a low GPA. So they're going to consider it all. The question is whether it will outweigh the negatives that you mentioned or weaknesses that you mentioned. And I think for the academic weakness, the best way to address that is to take classes and earn A's in them. If your 3 years of work experience may suffice if you have above average progression and can really show some impact on the job. So let's see if I'll take one more question. Okay, Sarah, I've also asked a very interesting question, which I hope does not actually apply to too many of you. The question is, does a physical challenge, example, problems in mobility to some extent, pose any barrier to full-time admission, assuming there is no deficiency with regards to learning abilities? No, it does not. Schools make accommodations for people with mobility issues, and we've had people with very, very serious mobility issues get accepted. I think that's it for today, Miriam. Should we wrap this up? Again, I want to thank you all for attending. We've gone over a little bit. I hope if you have questions I haven't addressed, please feel free to post them on our Facebook page, facebook.com/accepted, or on our LinkedIn group. I don't remember the exact URL for that, so the Facebook page probably is better. And if you need help with your applications, I'm going to post again the slide with a 10% off special. EB10 is a coupon code, and we hope to work with you. Good luck with your MBA application. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks, Linda, and thanks for a great webinar, and we hope you all enjoyed. As you leave, you'll see a short survey on the exit. If you could just take a moment and complete it, we would really appreciate it because we do value your feedback. And the recording of this webinar should be available early next week, so we'll send out an email letting you know when it's available. So don't forget, as Linda said, you can save 10% on any MBA service, non-rush MBA service. Coupon code EB10. It's also going to be in your email, so look out for it. We've also put together a whole list of resources because we know we didn't get to all of your questions. So again, look out for that email. It should be coming in about an hour. It has a whole list of resources for you for the different concerns that you had mentioned. Thank you again, and good luck finding the best B-School for you in the 2014 application season.